The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome to Dave's Gone By, an hour of music, talk radio, and comedy, brought to you every week on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming on AM 1240 WGBB.com. And of course, you can also get there through my website, davesgoneby.com. Happy almost summer. Spring sure went by quick, didn't it? I remember winter being bloody endless, one snowstorm after another, and then spring was like one rainstorm after another, and then a few nice days, and suddenly, heat, and then more rain, and now, out of the blue, summer. Maybe I'm getting older, so time goes faster, but this is just way too speedy. Here's an example. I was at our sponsor last week, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're a copy and printing shop in Hewlett, 1315 Broadway, and I was getting a job done there, as you should do, because they support the show. And I look on the windows of the shop, and I see that already, they're advertising Jewish New Year cards. There's like a big discount if you pre-order them by late June, and then a smaller discount if you get them in July. That's cool. I'm all for being prepared. I always figure the best day to buy Christmas cards is the day after Christmas, everything's half off, or 3 days later when the ornaments are 75% off and the Hanukkah candies are going for $1 a box. But of course, if you wait till a whole week after Christmas, you're screwed, because they've swept it all away and replaced it with crap for Valentine's Day. You gotta pick your moments, you know? So here's Hewlett Minuteman Press, a week before summer has even begun, hawking Rosh Hashanah cards. And it's just so disorienting. The seasons just aren't defined anymore, you know? Remember when September was the beginning of the school year? Labor Day. You watched the Jerry Lewis telethon. You went to sleep. You had one more day to buy new clothes and shoes for school. And then, bam, Tuesday morning, first week of September, homeroom. Now, kids going off to college, they're leaving the second week of August. What the hell is that? They can't watch the muscular dystrophy telethon because they're too busy studying for midterms. And of course, you know, I've railed on here before that Christmas in this country starts the day after Halloween. I mean, Thanksgiving used to be the hub, the point at which Christmas came on full speed. But now, Thanksgiving's just a quick break in the Yuletide action, kind of like a seventh-inning stretch. It just bugs me, because not every country in the world gets the delineation of seasons the way we do in the United States. Some of those ice countries in the northern hemisphere, well, they get like 10 months of winter, and then summer, which for them means you can take the lining out of your mucklucks. So let's enjoy these last 3 days of spring. It's a season all its own, even if it's 90 degrees, even if the sun is beating down harder than the nightstick of an Abu Ghraib warden, even if it's stickier than a debutante's panties on prom night. My God, you know, they just finished playing the NBA Finals. I say it's still spring. And Rite Aid, CVS, Duane Reade, don't you dare pull out school supplies until the first frost. And who am I to make such demands? Why, I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, and humorist. And this is my show, Dave's Gone By, a blend of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. And we have all three or four in abundance tonight. First of all, we have our weekly News Gone By, a weekend update-style look at events of the past few days. This week, not only do we have stories about dead baseball players, meteorites, and food fights, we have a special insider look at the upcoming Iraqi elections, and we'll be replaying a special song by Glenn Campbell that will probably not be on his greatest hits collection. And speaking of country music, at the end of the show, We will also pay homage to one of the all-time greats, Ray Charles. He died last Thursday, but I only heard about it after I put the whole show together, and I didn't have any Ray Charles CDs with me. And I was already doing a musical memorial to guitarist Robert Quine, so I figured, save Ray Charles for the next week and do it right. So that's what I'll do tonight, in tribute to this extraordinary interpreter of popular songs, Ray Charles. And in between the news and the blues, I've got the views of one of this station's most popular personalities, Joe Salzone. Been a couple of months since he was last on here. Joe is a political talk show host heard every Sunday night at 7 on WGBB. He's a conservative, a shade left of Sean Hannity, but you'll never mistake him for Al Franken. And considering that we just lost Ronald Reagan, and the Iraqi transfer of power is coming up, and the 2004 presidential race is just about to swing into high gear, I figured this was a perfect time to have Joe back on the show. And he also has something of a surprise announcement to make. Kind of a shocker, actually. So if you like Joe, you listen to his show, or if you're just curious, definitely stick around for the next hour. This is our 81st episode. Like the others, it's rated DGB-13 for content that's occasionally off-color, but more usually off-kilter. Politics, comedy, music, we've got it all on Days Gone By, and it all begins right after this.
Before you go to the box office, before you spend your hard-earned money on a Broadway show, do the research. With theater tickets topping $100, why not invest the time to see if you want to see it? Read Performing Arts Insider, your guide to all of New York theater, with timely listings, reviews, rumors, everything you need to know before you go. Performing Arts Insider. Single issues and subscriptions available from TotalTheater.com or call 516-295-1511.
If they asked me, I could write a book. Well, they did ask me, and I did write a book, a collection of my comedies called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. If you like farce, there's The Triple Wedding. If you like dark comedy, there's Last Respects. If your taste runs to the absurd, Blind Date. Something for everyone in Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it now at 516-295-1511 or through the Days Gone By website. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, June 17th, 2004. Time for the news gone by. A look at events of the past week from a summer-timed perspective. In science news, a New Zealand family had an unwelcome visitor drop in last Saturday. A 3-pound meteorite smashed through the roof of their house, landed on their couch, bounced and hit the ceiling, and then came to rest under a computer. Brenda Archer told the Sunday Star Times, quote, "It was like a bomb had gone off. I couldn't see anything. There was just dust." According to Reuters, this was only the 9th meteorite ever found in New Zealand and the first to hit a home. The Archers are drying the rock out in their oven. Apparently that's what you're supposed to do with meteorites. And they'll probably sell it. The value is in the $6,000 range, which, lucky for them, is about what it costs to build a new roof. Ask if there's any chance a flying piece of garbage could ever land in Manhattan. Scientists say, absolutely. Just wait until Air Force One sets its schedule for the Republican convention. In news of the Arab world, with United Nations watchdogs on the way, officials in Iran have toughened their stance on the country's nuclear energy program, said Foreign Minister Kamal Kharazi, quote, "Iran has a high technical capability and has to be recognized as a member of the nuclear club," unquote. Granted, I don't think many folks would be upset if this club had a few disastrous accidents on its home turf. I mean, what's 10,000 Muslim extremists, more or less, right? But it is a little creepy not knowing just what level Iran's nuclear program has reached. I mean, here they are developing weapons-grade uranium, but the first line of every scientific report begins, I wonder what this button does. Also in that region, the countdown continues as America waits to hand over the sovereignty of the Iraqi government to Iraq, the Bush administration is holding to its June 30th deadline, even though safety and stability remain the greatest obstacles to the turnover. I guess the most pressing question of all is, if the elections were held today, who would win, what would their political sympathies be, and how would American interests fit into that equation? To help answer that question, I've engaged members of a high-level political think tank to mull over the different outcomes and permutations of an Iraqi election should it happen. They spent days coming up with a cogent response, and I have their results. In fact, I'll play them for you. The folks at the think tank have actually gone ahead and simulated election day coverage in Baghdad. It's quite fascinating, and I think well thought out as to what will happen at the end of June. So let's listen. It's just an excerpt of about 10 minutes or so from the Horvath Institute in Washington, D.C. Here is a simulated account of the 2004 Baghdad Democratic elections. Let's roll that, please.
Hello, good evening, and welcome everyone to a very exciting day indeed. The very first Baghdad elections since the fall of Saddam Hussein. You can just feel the anticipation in the air, the unrest of the crowds, the nervousness of the participants themselves. Several seats in the first Iraqi National Congress are being contested today. Some very tight races between the hardline Shiite Shadow Party, the midline Sunni Sunshine Party, and the new American-backed Texas Turban Party. A lot of candidates very happy to be here, very lucky to be here. This was not an easy campaign. A political race such as this may be measured not only in winners and losers, but in exiles and casualties. So it will be very interesting to see what happens to whom on this historic occasion, on the steps and in the halls of the Baghdad Parliament. I'm Nigel Wilson, reporting for the BBC by special arrangement with Al Jazeera Television. Joining me in the booth is commentator Jack Fetterman from the United States. Welcome, Jack. What do you think of the matchup so far?
Pleasure to be here, Nigel. I say this is shaping up to be a test of the American resolve to make democracy to this backward nation. For every forward-thinking Texas Turbanite hand-selected by the Bush administration, there's a Muslim extremist just waiting to take his chair and possibly his head.
Do the Americans have a chance?
Oh, no question, Nigel. If they can neutralize the fringe and go straight up the center, coordinating their military defense in strategic blitz patterns, I think we could see a big day for the red, white, and blue.
Anything to watch out for?
The Yankees have to mind their Achilles heel. They see the big picture while ignoring the edges of the frame. You get the big picture home, try to hang on the wall, and that's when you notice the termites have eaten it to bits.
That's quite a metaphor, Jack.
Don't patronize me, Nigel.
All right, well, no time for light banter. We have our first contest of the day. It's for Deputy Minister of Transportation, a very important position. The fellow who wins this seat will be expected to get buses, rails, and the Baghdad airport up to snuff, not just for military personnel, but for commercial and tourist business as well.
What was this sad about Mussolini? He may have been a bad guy, but at least he made the trains run on time.
Which will be an Herculean task in Iraq, considering the current state of affairs. And although these elections are for 4-year terms, he may get only a few months to implement these changes.
Yes, absolutely. Any of these guys getting elected today, if they don't show improvement or at least stability in 6 to 8 months, we'll be seeing them on internet video choking on their own intestines.
Is that your prediction?
I give 3-to-1 odds that half these guys won't make it to Christmas.
Well, tough words there from Jack. I hope you're wrong. I hope the multinational force remaining in place after the turnover really scrambles in there and makes sure everyone's a good sport. Well, here comes the first candidate for the deputy minister position. It looks like, yes, it's Mohammed Isbar from the centrist Sunshine Party. He's halfway up the steps to the parliament, turning around, waving to the cameras. He would wave to the crowd, only, of course, there are no crowds, as they've been moved half a kilometer away for safety reasons. Isbar stops waving, turns, and begins walking up the top steps, where he will presumably go inside and cast a ballot for himself, as well as other members of the Sunni party. And, oh my God, he's been shot! A shot has rung out! He's grabbing his chest and stumbling backwards. Jack, did you see where the shot came from?
Well, Nigel, it sounds like it came from the left, over by that abandoned mosque you can see there. But this is a very echoey town. That makes it extremely difficult to pinpoint where bullets are originating from.
Well, they've certainly hit their mark. There's an awful lot of blood. Very quickly, it's pandemonium here.
I will say this. Whoever is responsible has damn fine aim. It's an extremely bright, hot day, which may have put some glare in the killer's eyes.
There are also American MPs and CIA stationed at almost every step, so it was a gutsy, yet surprisingly successful gambit by a would-be assassin.
Well, more than a would-be assassin, Nigel. Muhammad Isfar has officially been pronounced dead. He's been carried off the steps of Parliament on a stretcher. Never nice to see that, Nigel.
No, but it's always a possibility. I interviewed Muhammad Isfar last week, and I asked him, was he scared? And he said, you know, you're always aware of danger, but you can't let that deter you. You have to go out there and give it your best shot. Unfortunately for him, the best shot belonged to an unidentified marksman.
It's the nature of the sport, Nigel. One minute you're waving and giving that victory sign. The next minute you're flopping around faster than an epileptic on the tilt-a-whirl.
And just as fast, here comes another plucky candidate. This is the American 58-year-old Horace Berzinger. And he's a veteran. You can see it in his face in his purposeful stride up the Parliament steps.
Yes, he's going to need that bravery. It's clear that hardliners are playing for keeps. But Berzinger has 20 years in the U.S. Department of Transportation, so he may just have the experience to see this thing through, Nigel.
Well, I'm tempted to agree with you, Jack, except he's just been shot. Apparently from the same direction as the previous shooting, armored cars and helicopters are swarming in that direction as we speak. The American's body is being carted off to the rear of the building and... Oh, my God!
Is that?
Yes, it absolutely is. It's Mustafa Karmouli making a surprise run up the side entrance. He's made it through the doors and into the House of Parliament. That's going to make it very difficult to get him out.
That's an understatement, Nigel. Karmouli has made... or Karmouli, rather. I can't read. So many voices in the head tonight. He's been linked to several terrorist incidents in Saudi Arabia and has the backing of numerous extremist factions around the globe. He is a real team player.
Well, it remains to be seen whether the moderates can overcome this big score for the Shiites. Back to the elections, though. Approaching from the right is a diplomatic limousine. The windows are tinted, so it's rather difficult to make out as...
I believe those are the vice chancellors.
Yes, that's right. Well spotted, Jack. There are three different Americans running for vice chancellor on the Texas Turbine Line. One is from Halliburton, one is from General Electric, and the third is kind of a renegade, wouldn't you say, Jack?
Yeah, he is definitely his own man. 28 years old he is, had been working at a factory in Michigan that closed down 3 years ago, hasn't been able to find work in the States, so he's been doing independent contracting in Iraq. He's made some good money, apparently. But winning this would really put him in the big leagues.
Except that's not going to happen for him or for any of the contenders. Their car has just been firebombed by a surface-to-air missile. I can't tell if all three are casualties, but by the limbs flying every which way, no one in that car is going to be in any condition to help run a new government, that's for sure. My goodness, it's certainly been an action-packed morning.
Yes, and you know that tomorrow there'll be all this Monday morning quarterbacking back home. Why wasn't the area secured? Why are there still car bombs and deadly weapons this late in the game? Why aren't the Iraqis doing more to protect themselves? It's always so easy to ask those questions after the fact. After you've got 100 dead soldiers to ship home. I just wish some of these people asking hard questions would also appreciate, Nigel, the hard results.
You mean the elections themselves?
Yes, absolutely. Iraq is having its first free and open democratic elections ever. So there are bound to be some flaws, some bumps along the way, some hanging chads, as it were. You know, I passed a McDonald's on the way to the studio today, and looking at those golden arches and the Arabian sun, I said to myself, Jack, one day those... naysayers and negative Nellies are going to realize, like it or not, the Hussein days are over. It's a whole different ballgame now in Iraq.
And an explosive one. Five simultaneous car bombs just went off in the parking lot of the assembly. There were no fatalities, but the senior minister of education apparently has no sensation in the left side of his body.
Well, I guess he's all right now.
Jolly good.
Don't patronize me.
Sorry.
All right, I think we're on to the next political race. It's for mayor of Najaf, which sounds like something of a figurehead position, but actually entails a lot of delicate mediation between the left and right factions.
Yeah, the job requires someone of skill and tact and quite a bit of courage, actually. In the months leading up to this election, the top candidate appeared to be Al-Fatah Muhammad. He's a somewhat moderate career politician from the Shadow Party, running under the very popular slogan, Shiite, or get off the pot.
And we're just waiting for the first candidate to make his presence known. All's quiet on the steps at the moment. So far, the Sunni Sunshine Party is a no-show, and nothing from the Americans.
Someone's just tossed an American flag onto the steps and...
Yes, and just as that happened, it has been riddled with machine gun fire. So I think we know where the sympathies are in this particular race.
If only you can hear it. And you know what? And this bears it out. Ahmed Sakhmoud is running up the steps. He's from the ultra-extremist pro-9/11 party.
He's carrying something in his left hand. Can you make out what...
That's a head, Nigel.
Yes, oh my gosh, yes, it's the head of the Labour Party, Habibi Memsali. He's carrying it under his arm, rather triumphantly, making his way through the revolving door. Oh, he's dropped it! It's rolling out the door down the steps!
That's a bad fumble, Nigel. That'll cost the Shiites!
Piling onto the head of four private guards hired by Lockheed Martin. They're scrambling with it. They're hoping to hand it off to another American, but no! A band of extremists from Tajikistan have jumped out of the bushes and are now hacking the guards to death, samurai style.
This is no laughing matter, Nigel.
No, it's not.
We apologize. We're being tickled by feathers back here.
It's so exciting, you know?
We're being tickled, but it's a modified samurai style, Nigel, since, of course, these are not Asians. And certainly the Japanese way, exemplified by its harakiri ceremony, is more clean and methodical. The interns are hitting us with feathers, I'm sorry. This is just sawing away, like chopping down a redwood with a nail file.
Another fine metaphor, Jack.
Do not patronize me, Nigel!
Well, now, these human redwoods are going down without a fight. The radicals have handed off the head to Shiite shadow left-winger Tariq Akbara, and he's moving easily up the stairs, through the doors. No question, he will be Iraq's next Minister of Culture. Well, it seems officials have called a timeout, or as they term it, ceasefire, so we'll break here for a moment. You're watching election results on BBC Al Jazeera Link Up, live from Baghdad, Iraq. I'm Nigel Wilson.
And I'm Jack Fetterman.
Much more action to come. Don't go away.
Oh my god, the wedding is next month. We need flyers, invitations, booklets. Irving, we are screwed.
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterhead, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yup, 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling, let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and the News Gone By. In education news, students at Monroe Woodbury High School in upstate New York staged a food fight so fierce, police had to be called in to stop it. 9 police cruisers from 3 agencies were called in, with cops herding the kids out of the cafeteria and into the gym. District Superintendent Terrence Oliva was asked, and this is a quote, what was on the menu that day? And he answered, whatever's on the floor. No one was injured in the fight, although several of the students were overcome by nausea. However, that was long before the fight, and quite typical for the cafeteria. In sports news, the daughter of baseball legend Ted Williams has given up her fight to have her dad thawed out. Williams died 2 years ago, and his remains, this is true, they were brought to the Alcor Life Extension Foundation, a cryonics lab in Scottsdale, Arizona. The slugger's daughter says her dad wanted to be cremated, but his son showed a judge a handwritten note saying no, Williams wanted to be cryogenically frozen, and then thawed out in case scientists ever came up with a cure for death. Williams, by the way, is not the only baseball player in a state of suspended lifelessness. Just look at the daily lineup for the New York Mets. And speaking of dead wood, an 81-year-old German man has pled innocent to rape charges. He's on trial for multiple sexual assaults, but he says he can't even get an erection. The fellow already has one court victory. The judge ruled he could not be forced to take a potency test. Lower courts had said that to prove the man has diabetes and can't muster a boner, he could be ordered to undergo hospital ultrasound and, quote, nocturnal checks on his penis. According to Reuters, one court even said the medical staff could tie him to a bed, attach a ring to his gazinga, and use an erectometer to check if there was any stiffening. But that has now been disallowed. The trial continues, and defense attorneys say, win or lose, it's unlikely he'll do hard time. In celebrity news, country music singer Glenn Campbell, arrested last fall for drunk driving, was sentenced to 75 hours of community service and 10 days in jail. Well, not really 10 days, 10 nights. The judge granted his request to be free during the daytime so he could work, but he asked to sleep overnight in the pokey. I don't know, I think that's a little lenient, all things considered. After all, Campbell wasn't just DWI. He caused an accident and then left the scene of an accident. No one was injured, but that's just a lucky break. And it's not as if Campbell was remorseful or devastated or ashamed after the incident. We all saw the pictures of him looking like a crazy homeless guy when they did his mugshot. He was singing, he was drunk off his ass, remember? I played a tape of Campbell being brought to the police station after it happened. I happen to have that excerpt here again tonight. He's singing one of his most famous songs, only with the lyrics changed around. You tell me if this guy sounds contrite. Here's Glenn Campbell in the Phoenix County Jail from half a year ago.
Let go of me, let go of me. By the time I get to Phoenix, I'll be weaving, going 80 miles an hour, maybe more. I'll smash that lame Toyota with my Beamer. If there's damage, that's what royalties are for. By the time the police find me, I'll be plastered. I'll ramble on and on and on and on and on just like a kook. I'll kick and fight those law enforcement bastards who fill their breathalyzer up with puke. By the time I get to prison, I'll be sleeping. I'll be dreaming of how big I used to be. My son will pay my bail and he'll be weeping. I'll say, Daddy's gonna fight this, wait and see. This is how most country music comes to be. Let's go home and talk this over, you and me. Or, wait, you go. That bar is open until 3.
Glenn Campbell there, displaying his Phoenix envy on Dave's Gone By. And finally, in the news gone by, with its high humidity and average summer temperatures of 93 degrees, El Paso City has been designated the sweatiest city in America. Procter & Gamble sponsored the semi-scientific study, which calculated that in just 4 hours, the residents of El Paso generate enough sweat to fill an Olympic-sized swimming pool. In descending order, the other sweatiest places in America are Greenville, South Carolina, Phoenix, Corpus Christi, New Orleans, and any elevator with Star Jones on it. And that's the news gone by for June 17th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and erectometers to Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Dave's Gone By, P.O., Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. You can also email me, davesgoneby@aol.com. It is your feedback that makes this show worth doing. Well, no, not really. I do it because I get a kick out of it, but your feedback certainly adds to the joy and value of this program. So take a minute or two I mean, just write to me, an email, a postcard, whatever. I might even read your note on the air, name withheld upon request. So, send me messages, letters, poems, and more. And if the package comes from El Paso, no sweat. Back after this.
You know who's never eaten at the Tandoor Grill? Osama bin Laden. And you want to know why? Two reasons. One, he's an idiot. He doesn't realize how tasty their appetizers, main courses, and Indian breads can be. Two, he must be living in a cave, because for months I've been telling people 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center with a menu at TandoorGrill.com. Osama doesn't even know you can get 10% off by mentioning Dave's Gone By. And you know what? Don't even tell him about the Tandoor Grill. He'll never know it's India-licious. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. It's time for Dave's Got Guests. Well, one guest, but he's multi-talented, so I pluralize him. He's been on the show a few times. He may be, in fact, the guest I've had most on the show. He's certainly one of the voices you will hear most on this radio station because he's got Your World on Sunday nights at 7, and then he's got kind of a later gig that night, a looser show at 10, and he has been doing some other shows at other times during the week. I can't even count them. I don't even know when they're on.
They're all on my website, all of them.
See, he talks even before I fully introduce him. There can only be one person. It can be the one, the only, my good friend and my colleague, Joe Salzone. Welcome, Joe.
Well, Dave, thanks for having me. Thanks for dragging me out of Manhattan.
On a stormy Thursday day.
It's like 112 degrees in the city, but that's our problem, not you.
Well, because we had to turn off all the electric equipment. We heard these beepings coming through. We thought the board was zapped.
Yeah.
Might have fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got so much to cover, so let's get right into it. First, let's politics, because your program is political from a somewhat conservative and adorable perspective.
Yeah.
Joe got angry because I always refer to him as a conservative talk show host.
He's always a right-wing guy. You know, I have more. There's more to me than my politics.
More facets, like adorable and sensual.
Yes.
That'll do. And white. You're white.
I'm very white. I'm the whitest guy in the room.
You're
Jewish. You got that Jew tan.
You're actually gone for 2 minutes before bringing up the Jewishness. Thank you, Joe.
This is your world now, apparently.
All right, here we go. It's time to talk about, politics then.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan, dead. Still dead. 93 years old.
He's still dead, though.
His funeral is still going on, I think, at this point. What did you think of him?
He's my first role model in life, actually.
Not your dad?
My dad is up there, but Ronald Reagan, a lot of my ideology is based on Ronald Reagan's presidency. You know, I was only 4 years old when he was reelected in 1984. I was just born in 1984.
So really, by the time he was out of office, you were 4 years old, and he's your biggest role model?
Well, you know, it was because it was after his time in office that I read about him, read what he did, read what he stood for. You might not have agreed with him. I doubt you agree with most of what he did, but he was, by all estimations, a nice man. And you don't see that in politics. Politics now, we're so polarized in this country, like 50% liberal, 50% conservative. He was really a uniter and not a divider.
He was a personable fellow, and I have to admit, I've changed a little bit of my feelings about him. There was a terrific documentary on public television. It was nonpartisan. It was not Fox. It was not. And you would figure public television would go for a liberal slant. It was quite a pro-Reagan documentary in the sense of really showing how personable he was, how intelligent he was, clever, good with people. And it didn't negate some of the things. I mean, it certainly said that he did not really care about AIDS. He did not do the right thing by that. He did not.
Well, keep in mind, back then, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions, as there still are, about AIDS.
Yeah.
If a Democrat had been.
AIDS, can you get it from doorknobs or not?
I don't know. I've never been in the room with a lot of AIDS patients. And I try to keep it that way because I don't know if it's contagious. It's like the common cold.
It's contagious in one way.
And don't, you know, stop with your emails right away, all right? As soon as this segment is over, I'm going to open up my computer if the storm is, like, allowing me to use my computer at home. And all sorts of hate mails. And
most of them from me. So
right.
Yeah.
You hear the thunder in the background. Because we're actually outside now.
We shouldn't.
Well, you like to sing in the rain.
But he also went through the Iran-Contra thing and really tried to explain step by step. It's the first time I've ever understood it.
Well, you know what? The thing about Ronald Reagan is you could debate his politics and his policies, but it's kind of hard to think of, and there are other Reagan haters out there, but it's hard to think of something to say bad about the man himself and the person he was.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, he could be very stubborn, and he could get stuck in, especially later in life when he was getting older, and it was just beginning of the onset of the Alzheimer's, although they may not have called it then. So, yeah, I mean, he was on a radio interview at one point, mm-hmm. and he went through this story, and, they got to the end of the interview, and he's, thank you, President, and then he said, I just want to say one more thing, and he ended up repeating the entire story, not remembering that he just told it 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's sad.
Dizzy.
If it's true, I don't know if it's true or not, but that's sad.
Yeah.
That's not a bad person
thing.
What's so amazing to me about Ronald Reagan and his legacy is, when he passed away, he was out of public office for 15 years, out of the public eye for 10 years, and yet you still see all of this outpouring of emotions and grief. I have to say, when I heard the news, as much as we all knew the day was coming, it still came as such a shock,
I think, really?
To me. Oh. It did, because, again, I'm a conservative. I'm adorable, but I'm a conservative. and I got this from a lot of my conservative audience, my conservative friends, is we never really imagined, and this might sound kind of cheesy, but we never really imagined a time where Ronald Reagan would not be alive. It was kind of hard to picture
like Bob Hope and George Burns in a way.
Yeah. It was kind of hard, and it's still kind of hard to realize that he's not around anymore. I mean, he's spiritually still with us. But he's not there.
Do you think we'll feel the same way? And this is sort of pushing the topic into the second question about Bill Clinton, whose book is coming out imminently, almost 1,000 pages of it.
I'm trying to look at that as fair as I can. I don't think there will be. I think he's got a strong base, strong and loyal base. Every president has their very strong loyal base. But the difference, one of the many differences between Reagan and Clinton is, Reagan was able to transcend both liberal and conservative. I don't think Clinton was able to reach. He touched a
nerve. No, he certainly did not.
But he did not cross over.
No,
I don't think there will be
Are you a Clinton hater, or are you just in like him, or where are you on his legacy?
I think his legacy is not going to be positive. Forget about the impeachment, because I think that whole thing was ridiculous.
That was nonsense. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to have a strong legacy. He can spin it any way he wants.
The economy was quite strong for 8 years.
It was much stronger in the 80s.
During the Reagan.
Let me give you an example. Someone I've talked to many times, Neil Cavuto, he's managing business editor for Fox.
Mm-hmm.
He has said, deficits in the long run don't mean a thing. We had an amazing economy in the 80s, and the deficits were one of the guys around here would say, they were as long as the days are long.
Okay.
The same thing with in the 90s. But the big difference is the economy in the 90s was not real. It was all a bubble. And we saw that in the latter part of the 90s, early part of this decade, where we saw the dot-com bubble burst.
Okay.
It was not, the whole Clinton economy did not exist.
Oh, I see what you mean. So when that came, but now we still have the deficit and we have a crappy economy.
We're always going to have a deficit. We don't have a crappy economy.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people don't have jobs, but a lot more people do have jobs. There have been more.
Are they making enough to pay for every?
2 million jobs have been created in the last year and a half, which is considering 9/11, two wars, Afghanistan, Iraq. The economy is doing pretty damn good considering all things.
All right, I wish I could banter more and more about this, but there was one third topic that I wanted to get was to you. There's kind of an announcement you wanted to make. It's not a joke, and it's not whatever. It's a bit of a shock. And,
It's a big of a shock to everyone. Not a shock to me. I was diagnosed recently with multiple sclerosis, MS to some people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've had to explain this story to so many people over the last few days.
But there are millions of listeners listening to my show right now, so this will take care of all those phone calls.
Well, I hope so, at least.
Yeah.
It's essentially a nerve disease.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. You're able to move any part of your body you want without. We know. Without even thinking about it. People with MS, we don't have that ability. I'll tell you what my doctor told me. I will have my good days, and I'll have my bad days. As we're taping this now, this is a bad day. My feet have swelled up. It's hard to walk. It's really hard to keep a balance. Even sitting here, I'm kind of gripping the table so I don't fall out of my chair.
Are you for real? I thought you were just... Oh.
It's something I've had, according to the doctors, for the last year.
Well, what made you go to a doctor? What made you think...
Honestly... And I didn't know this after reading Neil. I mentioned Neil Cavuto before.
Yeah,
he wrote this book. He survived cancer. He was diagnosed with MS in 97, a year after going to Fox. And he, reading his book, it was so inspirational. It moved me to a point where I wanted to look into my family history. And I found that MS is big in my family. So I went to the doctor, got some early blood worked on, and then they said I'm basically in the early symptoms of it. But as I understand, there are 5 different versions of MS.
Mm-hmm.
There is the most serious kind, which I don't have. I have the weaker kind, whereas I explained to you off the air, Dave.
Yeah, but I never remember anything.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's not going to...
It's
not going to kill me, but it is going to make my life more difficult than it is now. You know, it's... like, for example, I woke up the other morning, my right arm, I could not move it. It was bent... or excuse me, it wasn't bent. I could not bend it at all.
So your brain could not tell your arm what to do.
I was telling my... mentally, I was telling my arm, move. But my brain was not giving that signal to the arm, and that's what MS is. It's I could be coming out of a car, just stubbing off the curb, and my legs will freeze. And there's nothing you can do about it. You just...
you wait until...
you have to wait, and it could take hours.
So is it going to be degenerative for the rest of your life, or is it going to stay at a certain
that's
level?
That's hard to tell. There are... there's medications out there that helps to stem the development of it, but once you have it, it progressively will get worse. It's something, look, you know...
So how are you going to treat it? I mean, are there medicines? Are there walking with a cane? I don't know.
Will be days where you might see me around here and I might have to have a cane with me. Mm-hmm. There might be days where I'm just not going to be able to come here.
Right.
That's a reality I've already had to face. It's not something that I really wanted to have, but, I can tell you, in all honesty, I was, a long time ago, before I had this, resigned to whatever my fate would be. There's no, I'm angry about it, but that's a natural reaction, I imagine. But, I'm still going to do my job to the best of my ability. I'm still going to come on here every Sunday night at 7, still talk to you, still hang out with my friends. There's just certain things I won't be able to do anymore. I could stay bitter, but I don't want to because
bitterness is my job. Leave me the
bitterness. You're the bitter. I'm the young, relatively handsome guy. You're the balding, short, stocky man. Yes,
yeah.
I was not going to use the
word stocky.
You're stocky.
I'm not stocky.
You got that George Costanza look going.
Oh, thanks. Well, gee, that ends this interview. Actually, also we're running out of time, so I want to thank Joe, and I want to wish you certainly, of course, best of luck.
Thank you.
Take a couple of weeks off. Kind of a vacation for July.
I'm gone for all of July.
But you've prepared some shows for the people who
will be listening. We have a lot of fun stuff coming up in July on Your World. And actually, a format change coming up. So you see, I'm still working hard. Format change coming up soon. More news, less opinion.
More news, less opinion.
Changing the show's name, too.
What's it going to be?
Still deciding that. We're leaning towards News Tonight.
All right. Kind of generic. Work on it. Work on it. And we'll be working on the rest of this episode of Dave's Gone By. After thanking Joe Salzone, thank you very much, man.
Thank you. Best of luck.
Thank you. Right after this. Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor one of the segments on this show or the whole show. Just go to our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, to see the rate sheet. Or call 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By. And now, the GBB Weekend Medley. Long Island's dating, Friday 6 o'clock. Bonnie D. Graham with lots of singles talk. She takes her phone calls and interviews her guests. Long Island's dating, 'cause Bonnie is the best. Redman Music Show, Mr. Redman Music Show, 7:30 Saturday night, independent music makes you feel alright, on the Redman Music Show, is the place where you should go. Sundays at 7, make sure that you are home, for fast-paced right-wing politics, Your World with Joe Salzone. He tries to keep an open mind and sort out what is true. If you like a good debate, then Joe Salzone's for you. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6, Redman, Saturdays at 7:30, and Joe Salzone, Sundays at 7, make it music to your ears.
Take these chains from my heart. Take these chains from my heart and set me free. You've grown cold and no longer care for me. All my faith in you is gone, but the heartaches linger on. Take these chains from my heart and set me free. Take these tears from my eyes and let me see just a spark of the love that used to be. If you love somebody new, let me find a new love too. Take these chains from my heart and set me free.
And he has been set free. Brother Ray, the genius, the greatest R&B performer of all time, Ray Charles, died June 10th, last Thursday, just around the time the whole country was in an orgy of parade mourning for Ronald Reagan, someone who did a lot more for certain segments of our society than Reagan ever did, also passed away. The joke, of course, is that Ray Charles gets up to heaven and St. Peter says to him, "Congratulations, you made it." And Ray says, "Well, thank you. I'm a little surprised since I was a womanizer and I did a lot of drugs and I was nasty to people." And St. Peter says, "Yes, well, we know. That's why even up here, you're still blind and black." No, but Ray was one of the most naturally great musicians in all popular music. And he wasn't born blind. At age 6, he started losing his eyesight from glaucoma. They sent him to the St. Augustine School for the Deaf and Blind, which made him feel ostracized and handicapped until he started discovering musical instruments. And that was his ticket out. Not only did he learn piano, alto sax, and clarinet, he could arrange songs for orchestras and write music in Braille. By the late 1940s, he was already having hits with his Maxim Trio, doing Nat King Cole-style light crooning. He was also doing heroin, which was understandable considering his childhood, but a monkey on his back for 20 years that, I'm sure, led to health problems later on. But in 1952, the big break came when Atlantic Records bought out Charles's contract, and he started to develop the whole rhythm and blues sound. You could say that "I Got a Woman" was Ray Charles's "Papa Got a Brand New Bag," the song that announced something brand new was going on. And then, by the end of the decade, he came out with "What I Say," which has really never been topped as a call-and-response song. And then came the country music. Charles moved to ABC Paramount and spent the 60s there. Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, Volumes 1 and 2, became a milestone. It blended two styles of pop that, I guess, would have seemed antithetical back then. I mean, the divisions between Grand Ole Opry honky-tonk and rhythmic black gospel seem like a natural alliance now. But then, even sociologically, it probably struck people as chalk and cheese. Until Ray.
You don't love me. You give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. Oh, I'm just a friend. That's all I've ever been. Cause you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
For I never knew the art of making love though my heart aches with love for you. A present shine amid my chance go by, a chance that you might love me too.
Love me too.
You give your hand to me, and then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away beside the lucky guy. Oh, to never, never know the one who loved you so. Well, you don't know me.
Oh, those damn Raylettes. I'm sorry, but even on Ray Charles's best records, the momentum sags a little when he brings in the chorus. I guess it was a convention of the times, or maybe he was banging all the singers and this was their meal ticket, but you do kind of go to sleep in the middle of classic Charles tunes and then wake up for the last verse. One of the great things about Hit the Road, Jack, which, by the way, was written by Percy Mayfield. I didn't know that. That's Percy Mayfield, not Curtis Mayfield, whom I believe is no relation. Anyway, Hit the Road, Jack is like a wind-up toy. You start it, and it just goes and goes and goes like crazy, until finally winding down a little at the end. No choruses, no schmaltzy slowdowns, just 2 minutes of absolute soul, created by Percy Mayfield, perfected by Ray Charles.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say? Away, but I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, cause it's understood. You ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road.
Ray Charles, hitting the road for good last week, paying a little tribute here on this episode of Dave's Gone By, and we'll have one more Charles tune to end the program, but before that, gotta do the necessaries. A thank you very much is so richly deserved by our advertisers and sponsors, which include Hewlett Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, for copying and printing and engraving and binding and cosmic noodling and poodle dyeing. 516-569-5577. Get 10% off their prices just by telling them you heard their ad on Dave's Gone By. And get 10% off savory Indian food at the Tandoor Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, just across the street from the LIRR. Lots of appetizers and entrees that range from spicy to very mild, all of them yummy. Call 516-766-4440. Or see the menu at TandoorGrill.com. Not Tandoori, Tandoor. Leave off the last I for India-licious. And thank you to some of the fine folks doing fine shows at this radio station. Bonnie D. Graham, host of Long Island's Dating, the Singles Show, Friday nights at 6. Mr. Redman, hosting the Redman Music Show every Saturday night, 7:30 to 9. And then at 9 o'clock, it's the comedy stylings of the Mikey and Jimmy Show, tag team humor, Radio Zoo style, Saturday nights. And then Sunday nights, it's my pal, Joe Salzone, conservative politics with a serious smile, as you've heard tonight, Sunday nights at 7. Thank you to Joe. And one more thank you, most of all, to my beloved wife, Joyce. Happy day after birthday, my love. And many, 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 many more. Hope this year will be everything you want it to be. And I hope this show has been everything you've wanted it to be, my beloved listeners. We've got another coming up next week, so I hope you'll join me in the neighborhood on Thursday, June 24th at 7 p.m. As I said, before we go, I wanted to play one more Ray Charles song. Turned out to be the song that won his last Grammy Award. Now, I didn't know that when years ago I was visiting Tucson, Arizona, and staying with a friend for a week, and he had a pretty interesting CD collection. A lot of film soundtrack music, Michael Nyman, also some pop, and a new Ray Charles album, which surprised me, since he'd been kind of an oldies act off the mainstream radar for years. I mean, he was still good for a concert. I remember my dad bringing me to see him sing at a racetrack when I was young, but I figured, you know, what the hell, I'll give the album a listen. And it was called My World. And it's not a great album through and through, but what do you know? The second track just floored me. Literally. Well, not literally, because I was lying on the couch while it was playing, but I heard it, and it was like, I can't believe Ray Charles can still do this. This is as legendary as anything in his heyday. What a song. And it proved that with the right material, on the right day, even as late as the mid-1990s, Ray Charles was peerless as a song interpreter. So let's go out with this classic written by Leon Russell, so good it might even stay in your head until next Thursday's Dave's Going By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Here's a song for you, and gone by.
Places in my life and time. I sung a lot of songs, I've made some bad rhymes. I've acted out my life in stages with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone and I'm just singing this song for you. I know your image of me is what I hope to be, babe. I treated you unkindly, girl, can't you see? There's no one more important to me, so darling, can't you please see through me? Cause we're alone now and I'm singing my song for you. You taught me precious secrets of the truth, but only nothing. You came out in front, and I was hiding. But now I'm so much better, so if my words don't come together, listen to the melody, cause my love's in there. I love you in a place where there's no space or time. I love you for my life, cause you're a friend of mine. And when my life is over, remember when we were together?
We were alone and I was singing my song for you. Thank you.